Greetings, Lisa Edwards here, CEO of Exclusive Career Coaching and host of the Exclusive Career Coach Podcast. Ready for some great career management content? Then let's dig in. Greetings. How's it going, guys? How you doing? Happy April. Happy birthday to me if you listen to this in real time. Got a birthday coming up. I want to talk to you today about the optional information on your resume, kind of what you should include and what you shouldn't. As many of you know, and as I've talked about before, one of the things that I offer for clients, probably the most popular package that I sell clients, is a document and coaching package, which includes the resume, cover letter, LinkedIn profile. The cover letter is free in that package. And then three coaching sessions, and we get together before we start the coaching portion of the package to determine what are the goals, how do we want to use those sessions, what's going to make the most sense for that client. So we've got flexibility, and we customize those three sessions for in a way that makes the most sense for the client. So if that's something you're interested in learning more about, you can schedule a complimentary consult, and I will walk you through the process we take in more detail, find out more about you and what you're looking for, make sure that's the right fit for you, and then let you know what the investment would be on that. All right, we're talking about your resume, mainly the sections of the resume. So what should be included in the resume? First of all, branding statement and summary should be at the top of your resume above the fold. That is something I covered last week in episode 314. So if that's a concept that you aren't familiar with or want more information, by all means, go back and listen to that episode. The next thing you're going to, and most people are going to have, is a professional experience section. Now, if you are a recent college graduate, you may find that your education section needs to come next. I find that many college graduates, even if they're just getting out of college, may have more weighty work experience, relevant experience via internships, via part-time jobs, maybe even study abroad, who knows what. And so that may they may put their work experience above their education, even if they're just out of college. But definitely, once you've had at least one substantive work experience outside of college, past college, then you're going to want that professional experience section to be next. That's going to include a 2-3 line job description of your daily duties, followed by a maximum of 6 bulleted achievements. You want each one of those to start with an action verb, changed, transformed, converted, whatever. And then you want to lead with the results. So whatever metrics you have for that achievement, you want to front load them. Don't go into detail about how you did it. And then at the very end, say, which, you know, increased revenue by $400,000. And by the way, one more thing about the professional experience section is it should be written in reverse chronological order, meaning most recent first. And typically I go back about 15 to 20 years with my more experienced clients. It's really a matter of looking at when did the jobs start to show the trajectory that they are now on, right? So let's say they're 20 years out of college, but the first 5 years they were in a completely different field or they were in very junior level jobs. There's no need if they're now like looking for a VP position. We don't want to start that far back. We want to show a trajectory, but we don't need to show it from square one, if that makes sense. So we want to look at when did jobs, what were the dates of various jobs? Where's it a logical break, both in terms of dates of employment and job titles and the relevance of those titles. The next section is the education section. This should also be written in reverse chronological order, but without dates in most cases. I honestly couldn't tell you the last time that I did include dates on an education section. My philosophy is it might not hurt someone of a certain age. The thing about the education is it's pretty closely related to your age, right? Like if you got a bachelor's degree at X, they can count back 22 years. I used to include them when I thought, well, this is, you know, someone in their 30s or their 40s. It's not going to work against them. But my philosophy has changed to be like, what's the point? Well, why would we include it? And so typically we do not. GPA is interesting, right? If you graduated 20 years ago, nobody cares what your GPA was, and it doesn't, it's not an important sales feature for you in terms of your candidacy. If you recently graduated, absolutely. If you went to Harvard Law School and graduated with a 4.0 GPA, yeah, you get to keep that on there. So it's not a hard and fast rule, But there does come a time for most people where the GPA is not relevant. And then in terms of coursework, again, only if you're a recent college graduate, because if you're showing coursework, you're kind of saying, in lieu of real world experience, I have this training, I have this knowledge. And so once you have the experience, knowing that you have that book knowledge is not useful. And there's also an assumption that, you know, if you got a degree in psychology, for example, you've taken kind of the same classes as somebody else with a degree in psychology. There's not much that's really noteworthy. For example, when I was an undergraduate majoring in music education at Florida State, we were on the quarter system, and I took an extra 9 quarter hours, so over 3 quarters, a pedagogy, piano pedagogy course that was required for piano performance majors, but not for music education majors, because I knew that I wanted to have a piano studio in my home and teach private lessons. And so, you know, early on, that would have been noteworthy. Not today. It's not relevant, nor is it, you know, recent history. But there might be something like that in your education. But otherwise, there's an assumption, you know, a business management degree is a business management degree, that kind of thing. The next section of your resume will probably be certifications and credentials. These need to be relevant and current. So, for example, if you're a volunteer fireman, but yet you're going for a sales position that has nothing to do with fire service, having your credentials as a volunteer fire person or whatever courses you've taken, it's muddying the water, right? It may confuse the reader. Now, if you want to sell fire equipment to fire departments, it's absolutely relevant. So you really want to look at it from that context. And the point about the current one is, what's the purpose of telling them that you used to be certified in something? Now, I can remember, and I don't remember what the certification was, but I do remember having a client who had a lapse certification in something, but her rationale was, this one's really hard to get, and everybody in my industry knows that, and so I want them to see that I did get it. It's not really necessary for me to have it at the level I'm at now, but I want them to know that I did the work to attain that. So that could be a situation. But most of the time, you know, if it lapsed 10 years ago, what's the point? You want to spell these out. So if you have a certification, you want to spell it out. If there's an abbreviation, you can include the abbreviations in parentheses. Same thing with the governing body. So if the American Institute of Fire Safety gave you this certification, you want to put American Institute of Fire Safety, and then if they're the AIFS, I guess that would be, you would put that in parentheses as well. The next thing is volunteer experience, and this needs to be, again, relevant and current, and without any controversial element to it. So volunteering at your church, assuming that it has nothing to do with your career, maybe should be left off. If you volunteer for, I don't know, something very controversial, maybe better to leave it off. Now, it's a judgment call, because the flip side of that is, and I totally get the argument, I don't want to work for an organization that doesn't respect the fact that I belong to and believe in whatever this organization espouses. Totally get that. I just want to give you kind of a balanced framework here. And then finally, foreign language is really helpful. And I find that a lot of people don't remember to put that on there. You always want to include your level of proficiency. So I'm working with a client just yesterday, and he was born in a Spanish-speaking country. So he has native language proficiency in Spanish in addition to being fluent in English. Where this goes on your resume really depends on how relevant that is to your qualifications. You know, if you're trilingual and that you're applying for something that all the job postings are requiring, you know, having a certain language level, language ability, then it probably goes up higher than if you speak, I don't know, Polish, and it has really nothing to do with your work. So let's talk about the order of these sections now. Think of this as an inverted pyramid. So if you picture an inverted pyramid, the most important, the most weighty, the most impactful information should go up towards the top. And then it kind of goes down from there. So branding and the summary is always going to go at the top. There's It doesn't make much sense to summarize at the end for your resume. And it goes what we call above the fold. And I've talked about that recently. So if you think about, you know, kind of an old newspaper folded in half at your door, above the fold means it's on the front page and it's up where the heading is, as opposed to the bottom half of that page. For experienced candidates, as I mentioned a moment ago, education is going to be next. If you are a recent college graduate, really weigh what do I have in the way of experience, relevant, you know, again, internships, volunteer experience, whatever, and weigh that against your education and decide which one is more important. And from there, it's really going to be a judgment call as to whether the credential section, the volunteer, the education should go next. And I want to make it very clear that that may change from position to position. You may apply to one job where it's clear the education piece is really important or the credentials piece is really important. So feel free to swap those sections around in a way that makes the most sense for you. That is not going to affect the scoring of your resume by the ATS. It's not going to notice or care what order your sections are in, but it could make a difference to the human. Now, what should not be included on your resume? Get these things off. I've beaten this dead horse. I'm going to beat it a little bit more. Get that objective off. An objective tells an employer what you want, not what you can do for them. It is very self-serving. And usually, quite frankly, it's vague and fluffy. So off immediately. Next, I'm still seeing that references provided upon request at the bottom of some resumes, and that's been kind of passé for many decades now. So that should not be on there, nor should your actual reference list. So my recommendation is you have a separate document. You may choose to submit it with your resume, or you may wait until it is requested. I like to put 5 references on there because they typically will want to call 3, and I've allowed for people to be on vacation or out of pocket. And I'm going to put for each one of them, Sue Smith, director, blah, blah, wherever they work. I'm going to put their address if I can, even though nobody mails anybody anything, phone number, email address. And then I'm going to put usually in italics underneath that, former direct supervisor, former coworker, current boss, because that allows, that really helps the reference caller, because I've had to call a lot of references in my life, and it really helps to know how this person is connected before I make the call. And it also may inform which of these 5 people I want to talk to first. You know, there shouldn't be anything like, you know, family friend or my brother on there. But if there is, then I'm not going to call because I don't need to know that your brother thinks you're great. Hobbies should not be included on your resume unless they are directly related. So I don't need to know that you love to snowboard unless you want to be a snowboard salesman or I don't know, something like that. It's unless it is directly obviously relevant. They don't care. It's not relevant. It's taking up valuable real estate. A picture. Now, I want to talk about this because a lot of the templates that you'll see out on various sites will include a place for a picture. And I don't like it. And here's why. Pictures are still not considered a necessary or actually legal part of a resume unless you're applying for something like you want to be an actor. My concern is when you put the picture on there, I don't think of it so much as being a discriminatory factor like it was back in the day when they eliminated pictures on resumes. That was the reason. We don't want someone to be discriminated against on the basis of gender, skin color, whatever. I think what happens now, I'm afraid that what might happen is someone will look at that and think, oh, they're out of touch. They don't understand that you don't put pictures on your resume. Like, I don't see an upside is essentially what I'm saying. I don't see the benefit of having your picture on there. And I do see a potential downside. So I am still not a fan of having a picture on your resume. Absolutely, they can see what you look like. They're going to look up your LinkedIn profile. They're going to do a search on Google to see what else you're showing up on. They're going to see, you know, if you have pictures out there of you at the party with the, you know, playing beer pong, they're going to see that. But it doesn't need to be on your resume. And then other personal information, which I still occasionally see on resumes, usually from older candidates, things like your birth date, your marital status, the number of children you have, I don't know, something about your health. And those were all standard elements of the resume back in the day when I started my career. In some parts of the world, that is still expected. You're still expected to have a picture on there. I've worked with folks in Europe on CVs, and the rules are different over there, but I am And I probably should have said that at the outset. This is the US's version of things. And I find that Canada, because I have worked, and I've told you this before, I've worked extensively with Canadian clients because I subcontracted with a company up there for several years. I was their primary resume writer and their only career coach. There's very little, if I can't even think of anything that I did differently on a Canadian resume than what I do on a US resume. And then finally, I want to make a note about you have the option of leaving off any position, job position on your resume, as long as you include that position if they have you fill out a job application. So if it's something that was very short in particular, you know, you may say, you know what, I got there, I realized immediately it was a mistake, I never really did anything. You can leave that off. It becomes an issue of kind of balancing out, okay, now I'm going to have a gap in employment. What's that gap going to be? And how does that measure against the fact that, you know, the job doesn't add anything? There's really nothing there. I don't really want to talk about that job. There's nothing to be said about it. So it's a judgment call. The longer you were in the role, the less likely I would be as your resume writer to advocate for you leaving it off. But when it's something that was like a month or two, absolutely, it may make sense. I did that recently with a client. I was like, do we need to include that? And she said no. Finally, I want to make a note about a skills section. As you may have noticed, I haven't talked about a skills section as something you should or shouldn't include. Applicant tracking systems, ATS, are scoring resumes higher when those skills are integrated into the position where they were developed. You can have a skills section, and I still do occasionally. I find that particularly with if I want to have a list of all the relevant technology they've worked with, I'll do like, you know, technology skills, or maybe I just call it skills, but it's mostly tech. But what I like to do is integrate those in. So I may have, and I talked about this on a recent episode, have like an introductory phrase or one or two words at the beginning of each of their achievement bullets that kind of highlights what this achievement is about. So if it's about integrated marketing, and then I go on to talk about what they did relevant to integrated marketing, now I have included the term integrated marketing into the job for which it was developed, rather than having it sitting out here on an island by itself. So that's something else for you to think about. I hope all of this, what to include and what not to include, has been a good refresher, maybe new information for you. If you have any questions, shoot me an email. I'll be glad to answer. And think about scheduling a complimentary consult and talking about what I can do for you in terms of your marketing documents and coaching. I will see you next week. Take care. If you enjoyed this podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you subscribed and left me a review. If you would like to discuss working with me to achieve your job search or career goals, my calendar link is in the show notes.